Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network, and I am joined once again on this beautiful Thursday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good. I'm great.
That's great.
Never better.
So you're getting to know that football team on a very personal one-on-one basis, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Here, I want to take everyone a little bit behind the curtain because I've mostly posted these interviews in order. I did them over the course of 3 total hours on Tuesday. Interviewed 7 of these guys. Now, I don't look, guys, some of you might be ditch diggers for a living. Some of you might, you know, you might have heavy jobs that you do a lot of like construction or something. You're doing 12 hours a day of backbreaking work. Well, I'm a journalist. I sit in a chair most of the day, type on a computer, you know, do all that kind of stuff. So doing 3 concentrated hours of interviews turned my brain into sludge, absolute mud in there. So yeah, it was a tough haul on Tuesday.
You asked like Lucien Holland, how many passes he might complete this year, right?
You know what's funny about that is he is a former quarterback, which I learned during that interview. And I did ask him about whether or not that applies at all to edge play.
That's because I watched that. I watched, Dave.
You watched. You're one of the few.
Especially Lucien Holland, because I was really curious to see what he said about his spring game performance. And that he weighs 230. And I changed it on our
look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we took some facts away from those interviews, and we'll get into a lot of that stuff over the next couple of weeks. But
interesting too, just we had him at 221, and we were going by the official weight that they released. So he gained 9 pounds.
Yeah, and Cole Cogshell, which I just posted this morning, I think he's listed at 249. He said he's 253 now. So that's 4 pounds since they updated those rosters.
Dang. Maybe they should reweigh everyone.
Exactly. Maybe they should. So anyway, there'll be a few more of those coming through. It was awesome for UCLA to get that done for us. And so there'll be a lot of good interviews. But today, we wanted to start kind of previewing fall camp. Because that, Tracy, is just around the corner.
2 weeks, I would say. We don't know the exact date, but we'll say 2 weeks.
We'll say 2 weeks. Next week is Media Day in Chicago. I'll be going.
Chicago.
So that will be an interesting time talking to Babbo and company. And then the season will be like right around the corner. This is the unofficial kind of start of everything when we get to Media Day. That's when the season truly starts for me, Tracy.
For us, absolutely. This is when obviously Dave is putting in work. And if you haven't noticed, we've tried to put in a big effort this off season to keep content flowing. Mostly because, you know, we made a transition to the On3 network. And I mean, we are greatly benefited by TM.
Oh yeah.
Because he's doing an amazing job at just that. In fact, covering the women's basketball team in their exhibition against Canada.
Yeah.
Last night.
Yeah. And we'll have a recap of that game up a little later this morning from our friend Tracy McDonald. But in the meantime, we did want to begin previewing what we are expecting in fall camp. And we were going to go, as is custom, Tracy, we're going to go kind of unit by unit, little nuggets we've heard and things we are expecting from the different pieces of the offense today. Shall we start at the very beginning, the very good place to start? Quarterback?
Surely.
All right. UCLA is obviously returning starting quarterback Nico Iamaliava from last year. From what I've heard from this offseason, he's, you know, drawn, and this is post-spring, drawn pretty rave reviews for his leadership, for his commitment, for his, you know, being in the playbook, the whole thing. Which is a lot of what you always hear about the starting quarterback, but it's always good to hear it. I think the more interesting conversation here, Tracy, is backup quarterback, because we all know it's going to be Nico starting for UCLA. But then there's the essentially the competition between Ty Dieffenbach, the transfer quarterback who came in this spring, and Madden Iamaliava, who came in last year after the spring, along with his brother, and then was competing with Dieffenbach for the backup job coming into spring and then coming out of spring. And for us, when we were watching spring, I think we were both kind of impressed physically with Ty Dieffenbach, not just his size, but also his athleticism, which I think we saw a little bit of on the tape we saw of Cal Poly, but not to maybe the extent he showed in spring, where he looked capable of doing a lot of the same things that Nico can do, you know, not quite as athletic, not quite as agile, not quite as, you know, the dynamic athlete that Nico is, but not too far off it from a straight ahead running standpoint. But then coming out of spring, I had heard that Madden actually did impress a lot of people, maybe more than they were expecting coming into spring. So this still seems like a real competition to me heading into fall camp.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, what it was, I think this is from what I've heard a little. Madden's still pretty young. He's learning the position. And then he got a whole new playbook. So I think first impressions is, he's got the tools, athleticism. He's got a good arm, but he's young and he's learning the playbook. And Dieffenbach might be a little bit better at picking up stuff. So and then Dieffenbach, I think when they first saw him, they thought he was possibly more impressive as just a pure passer than they anticipated, and physically and athletically. The guy's 6'6" and he can run. So I had heard from a source then, when they went into spring practice, they were thinking Dieffenbach might be a little bit ahead. But then Madden made a good move as he got to know the offense a little bit more and was able to rely more on just his pure talent. Is kind of how it was. I mean, we're pretty much hearing now, I think you'd have to say that Madden probably leads that little competition.
Yeah.
Might have edged ahead. So that's something definitely to watch for in a couple of weeks when August camp starts.
Still trying to make it happen. You're still trying to make fetch happen.
If you wouldn't point it out, it would just happen.
Tracy, you've been trying this for years, literal years.
I'll call it fetch camp then.
Everyone calls it fall camp.
Okay.
Just give it up.
No. Nope.
Give it up.
And then, I think the biggest takeaway to me is that Ty Dieffenbach is a lot better than we probably thought he'd be overall, and that he's playable. That's a really big development.
Well, and I would say, the interesting thing there is in today's like modern college football, having three playable quarterbacks, you know, in olden times, we were always talking, you got to take a quarterback every year because you need, you know, five guys in that room, the whole thing. That's not realistic anymore. Like, it's just not, guys want to transfer and play and the whole thing. So they're going to keep transferring until they find a spot. To have three playable guys, which is, I think, I would go out on a limb and say both Madden and Ty Dieffenbach would be playable this year. That's actually pretty good depth at this point in kind of the state of the game. Kind of reset your priors, I think, from that standpoint, just because teams don't usually have like a true freshman, a redshirting sophomore, a junior, and then, you know, a senior and a fifth year guy. That's just not the way it is anymore. In terms of the context of modern college football, it's actually, I would say, a pretty decent depth chart at this point. And that doesn't even get into the two other guys. We haven't seen DJ Bordeaux yet. He wasn't in this spring, but he'll be in for fall camp. So I'm really excited to see him. It's always that first impression. And sometimes that first impression can give us a faulty impression. I'm thinking of Ashanti Woolard here, where we watched him and we're like, wow, that guy's throwing rockets. And then, you know, obviously what turned out was that he was throwing rockets, but we're never quite sure where they're going. it's going to be interesting, I think, to see DJ Bordeaux. And then there's also Colton Gamino, who I think is kind of going around into being, you know, a important scout team guy, but likely not impacting the depth chart during his UCLA time. But Bordeaux is interesting. I want to see if he can, if he looks like a guy who can develop into a starter by his third year. Because obviously that would go a long way towards shoring up the depth chart for when the Iamaliavas inevitably are done at UCLA.
It's funny too, because most of the time, if you're doing a shorthand kind of evaluation of quarterbacks, it's not 100% foolproof, but a lot of times it is. You, within the first four or five throws of just watching them throw, you know, down the field, it's pretty easy to think if the guy has a chance. You know, if he's got a real arm, there are plenty of, in college football, there are plenty of guys who become quarterbacks who are just not natural throwers. Those guys generally don't make it to a high level of college quarterback. You have to be able to have just a natural throwing motion. And you can see that within four or five throws, especially if you've been doing this a while like we have. So, yeah, that's always kind of fun. And as soon as we saw Diefenbach throw, well, okay, he actually has a motion and can throw a ball. So, yeah, that's always fun. And you're right, in this day and age, I mean, Diefenbach played at Cal Poly, so he has some experience. You know, would it be too much for Madden, you know, when he actually went out on a field? It would be interesting to see, and I bet we'll get that chance to maybe see it this season. But to have three guys or at least two backups that you might feel confident about putting in the game, that's a pretty good situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So that will be obviously the competition to monitor there as backup. And then the freshman, obviously, we're interested in seeing is DJ Bordeaux. Moving on to running back. So this is, I think, one of the more intriguing competitions on the offense this entire fall camp. And maybe very likely stretching into the season. And it's a good competition in the sense that, like, when I look at this depth chart, it's really deep. You know, we constantly are talking about the top three guys and how, you know, how the snaps are going to shake out there. Anthony Woods, Javian Thomas, Wayne Knight. But almost before I would get into that, I want to, like, what we saw out of Troy Lieber, Dylan Lee, even Carson Cox this spring, they've got a lot of depth here where these are guys who I think if you put them in a game wouldn't embarrass themselves and would be capable runners. And then obviously at the top of the depth chart, you've got three seniors in Woods, Thomas, and Knight. But I don't know, Tracy, would you agree with me that this is maybe, considering they're only going to have one of these guys typically on the field at once, this is maybe the deepest group on the team this year?
You know, from this standpoint, is we know these guys that we can speculate about other position groups that they could be as deep if these guys are as good as we think they might be. We know these guys. We saw Wayne Knight enough. And I think we've seen Anthony Woods and Javian Thomas playing at this level and being impact players at this level. So those three guys right there, I'm still kind of, I thought that was one of the most impressive off-season recruiting jobs the staff did. Thomas and Woods had to know Wayne Knight was coming with the staff from James Madison, and they stayed on. Now, it could have been just out of familiarity. It could have been that they bought the pitch that, you know, we don't use one running back all year. But just to be able to, I would have been impressed if they got Wayne Knight and either Woods or Thomas, but they got all three. So from this standpoint, we've seen these guys. So yes, to answer your question, because we know them. There might be other positions that once we get to know are this deep, but from what guys we've seen play, that's a pretty impressive depth chart. And then you even met Troy Lieber got a lot of carries in spring.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're looking for a big option. Dylan Lee was brought in. But it seemed like Troy Lieber was more of the guy who got a little bit more carries over Dylan Lee as the bigger option. which would be pretty interesting. I've heard Ligbur is pretty respected on the team. He's kind of a leader, you know, like a, if you, however you call it, a former walk-on. We say former now because everyone's pretty much former. But yeah, no, I like, you know, again, Dave, get these guys some blocking. You're going to have some good running backs.
Yeah. And I think so. And this is no knock on people listening, because I think you're a UCLA fan. You're not watching, you know, whatever Anthony Woods was before Utah, Idaho football. You're not watching a ton of Cal. So your impression of Anthony Woods and Jamie Thomas is formed entirely off of last year. But I do, like, I've been emphasizing it a lot in my, in the 30 most important Bruins countdown, but that offense was fundamentally broken. Like, it just didn't work. The offensive line was horrible. The scheme was bad. And so what you saw out of Anthony Woods and Javian Thomas last year, you can more or less throw out. Javian Thomas didn't put up great numbers. If you go back literally 1 year to Cal, he was averaging over 6 yards a carry. Anthony Woods, if you go back to pre-ACL tear at Utah, he was one of the top rushers at the FCS level. And if you watch them just isolated on them and their running ability, I think they're both pretty high quality backs. I think Anthony Woods is my preference among the two of them. I think Javian Thomas, if I had a knock on him from Cal, it was that he goes down a little too easy at first contact. He needs to have space to work. But one thing I noticed from this spring, and one thing that I think has me excited for how they're going to use him, is there was a real emphasis on getting him in space, a real emphasis on getting him the ball on swings or on, you know, designed runs that are going to get you outside a little bit quicker. And I think, you know, if there's that acknowledgement of what a player is good at, what a player is bad at, then I think you could see the strengths of these running backs accentuated in ways that they really weren't last year. So that's like kind of the note on Woods and Thomas. And then Wayne Knight, you know, we only saw, what did we see? A week and a half of him healthy this spring before he got dinged up?
Yeah, we really didn't see much.
Yeah, he really didn't do a whole lot. I saw him make a couple of big plays.
One of the guys I'm most excited to see.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to watch him in fall camp because I think it might very well change my impression of him. But the reason we still have Woods and Thomas listed ahead of Knight in this depth chart is, first, we expect this to be a platoon. I don't think one of these guys is going to get like 80% of the carries. So it doesn't really matter. And then two, I think people have kind of a false impression about Thomas and Woods' quality. And then there's this impression about Knight that's been built from putting up gaudy numbers at James Madison, which I don't want to throw those completely out, but a lot of those were built against Sun Belt level defenses. A lot of it was built against, you know, defenses that don't stand up to what the Big Ten is going to offer. And Wayne Knight has, you know, he's 5'7". And I don't think it doesn't necessarily hurt you to be 5'7". But it does. It's one of those things where, like, from a durability standpoint, from a, you know, being able to bang, being able to power through guys, it does help to have a little bit more size. And he's not quite built like Maurice Jones-Drew, who could make it happen at 5'6". So, you know, I've got a couple of, I won't say they're concerns or worries, but I've got a couple of questions that I'd like to have answered a little bit more in fall camp, watching him against UCLA's defense.
Yes.
But the one thing I'll say, Carson Cox, if I was actually
that's your guy.
If I was picking the guy among the three behind those three to be actually the power back, I think it's actually Cox, because watching Dylan Lee and Troy Lieber, I think they're both pretty versatile backs. I mean, we saw Dylan Lee catching balls out of the backfield. We saw him doing some things that required pretty good life athleticism. Carson Cox, though, he runs with that kind of low pad level anger that you really do want out of a power back. I don't know if it'll happen this year, but if I was looking at just pure running style, I think he makes the most sense as somebody you would want in on short yardage right now. And then as he develops, maybe he turns into more of an all-purpose back. But right now, he looks more like a power guy to me.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch to see who, I mean, how many carries will a big back get? I mean, there'll be packages probably for each of these guys. It'll be interesting to see who might be the go-to among those three.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, moving on, Tracy. Do you want you pick? You choose your adventure. Offensive line or wide receiver next?
Let's do wide receiver
next. All right.
We've spoken a lot about this. It is could be the most exciting unit probably on the team, I think. And what made it so was last spring in watching Brian Rowe. And because of you, Dave, I went and watched some game highlights film of Brian Rowe. And if it would only be that every announcer was wrong, but they all called him Brian Rowe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody said Rao. And I, you know, I'm always in self-doubt mode. So I was sitting there and I'm like, I don't know, that doesn't make sense to me, but maybe it is.
Are you interviewing him soon?
I was, well, you know, again, behind the curtain. That was scheduled a few weeks ago. It didn't quite come together. So we'll see.
First question. Hey, Brian.
Pronounce your name. Well, so, okay.
He's going to think you're crazy.
Behind
Rao?
The curtain. I did that with Aiden Gobira because his name is pronounced Gobira.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And also, our friend,
Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Our friend Lucian Holland is not Lucian Holland. He's Lucian. Yeah.
Is our friend Josh Lewin paying attention here?
Yeah, dude. I'm doing the homework for you, buddy.
Aiden Gobira.
Yeah.
Hey. Aiden
Gobira.
Hey. Okay. Fun times.
Yeah.
So wide receiver. There were two big things that were takeaways. Was Brian Rowe was a different looking type of receiver at 5'10", 5'11". Physically, you know, doesn't look like much, but man, the quickness, his balance, his hands, just his whole skill set. His ability to get up the field, it if you were just watching it and didn't know, and you saw if you watched the offense for your series, and you said, "Give me one guy who really stood out," you would have said that guy. So he's the big revelation. The second thing was the biggest mystery, and from reading all and watching video of all the transfers coming in, it wasn't hard to say Leland Smith would be the guy. I mean, he had the biggest season last year. He's a very seasoned veteran, senior. He's, you know, physically ready. He's, you know, 6'4", 220 pounds. And then he steps onto the practice field last spring, and he did one-on-ones, and Dave and I turned to each other and said, that looks like an NFL guy playing against college players. So we had him. We were raving. And then he got dinged up and then, you know, because he was injured, disappeared for the rest of spring, did participate in the spring game, but didn't do anything. So those are the two biggest kind of eye-opening surprises from this spring. Dave has his guy, Landon Ellis. He's kind of your guy, right?
He's one of my guys. He was my drafted guy before spring started. Obviously, my guy coming out of spring is Brian Rowe, but we can just leave that as he's everyone's guy now.
Yeah.
Landon Ellis, I think he's my pick to be like the surest, like he's going to be a major rotational player all year. Just obviously a lot of offensive, a lot of trust in him on the offensive staff because he played for them at JMU. He's a strong bodied 6'2", physical guy, really good route runner. He's not, I would say, electric athletically. I would say straight ahead, he's pretty good. He's not like, you know, the world's most lithe and agile athlete. But he's got good, strong hands, makes plays in traffic. I keep making the comparison, but I do think it's just, he's kind of Jordan Payton-esque. Like he's just kind of physically put together the same way, kind of athletically put together the same way. Just, you know, he's going to be a kind of sure-handed possession route running receiver. And I think that's going to translate. You know, the one thing that stood out about watching the JMU Oregon game because there was explosive plays. Like, I think Wayne Knight had a couple of huge explosive plays, but then he was mostly stifled. Their quarterback was not very good. But what stood out to me watching that game was that the receiving core for JMU belonged on the same field as Oregon. Like, they looked athletically capable, and Landon Ellis was a key part of that. So I do think he will translate to the Big Ten pretty well. But yeah, he's definitely one of my guys. To echo what you were saying, though, I want to see Leland Smith. I want to see him fully healthy in fall camp and see if he can provide that big athlete receiver that I think this group was first missing last year, but second, that I think could unlock some even higher level potential for this passing attack. Because as much as we love Brian Rowe, Brian Rowe's 5'10". You know, I think he's capable of doing a little bit more vertically than you would think, given that he's 5'10". But he's still, you know, a 5'10 with a 40-inch vertical is a little bit different from a 6'4 with a nearly 40-inch vertical, which is what Leland Smith is. So that's something I'm excited to see a little bit more of.
And then there are some potential breakout guys. Let's cover this for Samaj Morgan and Mikey Matthews had solid springs, kind of the same role, 5'8 to 5'9, slot receivers, caught the ball well in spring. Actually, were probably both more impressive than we thought they would be. I think the staff now looks at them. They're both true seniors, so that I think the staff looks at them as experienced players. Morgan having come from Michigan, Matthews, Cal, and then UCLA last year. So reliable, not big time, not big play kind of guys, but reliable slots that can, you know, get in a seam and catch a ball. Aiden Mizell might be the other wild card.
Yeah, kind of an X factor if he can put it all together.
Really, we saw his speed this spring. He would catch, he caught a few balls and we were impressed, and then he didn't do much at times. He has the potential to be a deep threat. It'll be interesting to watch him to see if he's in that rotation, if he's used situationally, how he's utilized. I think there's going to be a younger guy who probably steps in, and my candidate,
Kenneth Moore.
Probably Kenneth Moore. He looked good all spring.
He's fast as hell.
Really fast. Caught a touchdown pass in the spring game. Kind of seems like you just had a feeling he knew what he was doing. I think he's going to have a really good shot of making the rotation, getting on the field. Just to mention too, with the new 5-and-5 rule, there are no red shirts. So if there was a guy who's pretty talented, but he's kind of young and maybe slight, old rule, you could play 4 games and then still redshirt. And most of the time, you know, he would play in the non-conference games. Now it doesn't matter. Yeah. You get five seasons and that's it. You're not trying to save a redshirt for anyone. So someone like Kenneth Moore, that could impact. They could very well just say, we're not saving this kid for anything. He's got 5 years. Let's put him out there.
Yeah. Even if all you're doing is doing jet motion with him and giving him a, you know, a touch pass or whatever, like getting somebody's speed on the field for like a simple package of whatever, handful of plays or whatever that you're playing, you know, 5 to 10 snaps a game, that is now much more viable. Because in the olden days, you wouldn't want to do that because you don't want to burn a year doing the whole thing. But there are no years to burn. So it's fine. It's whatever. And so I think you'll see that more and more with guys who are fast, especially when they are young. Because the reason you wouldn't play Kenneth Moore in the old system is because he doesn't have yet the body to hold up and play enough snaps to make it worth it to waste a year. Now it doesn't matter. You play him 8 snaps a game and you could make them very high impact snaps, but then he's, you know, he's not having to hold up physically at 170 pounds.
Yeah. So I feel good. You got your possession guy in Landon Ellis. You have your big time, your number one guy in Brian Rowe. Leland Smith, if he becomes what we saw of him, those three guys right there, that's a really good receivers group.
Yeah.
And then you got the potential. I think there's solid production probably from Morgan and Matthews, potential out of Aiden Mizell, and then maybe Kenneth Moore. So I really like this group a lot,
yeah.
especially if Leland Smith is even close to the guy we saw, or even close to the guy we saw on tape last year. He had, I think, 50 catches, 49 catches
at yeah.
San Jose State. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to all these names and you're like, who are these guys? Because I haven't been paying attention in 8 months. It's because they completely changed out this group, more or less. Mikey Matthews is the only holdover who played any kind of snaps last year. At the back of the depth chart, there's a couple of guys, and Shane Rosenthal and Jace Brown, Jace Brown we currently have listed just behind Landon Ellis as the Z receiver, but in reality, it would almost be better to do this as like a flow depth chart, because the reality is, if Landon Ellis isn't available, Brian Rose, Tamaj Morgan, Mikey Matthews, Leland Smith, probably Aiden Mizell are probably all going to see more time before Jace Brown would get significant snaps. But there's some other guys. I mean, Major Pride, we didn't see him in the spring because he was mostly hurt. Really. Yeah. The true freshman, Marcus Harris, we saw a little bit of, but not a ton. Jonah Smith, by the end of spring, he was actually showing a little bit. So he'll be interesting to watch. He's the guy who was hurt. And came in early to rehab at UCLA, if everyone remembers, and then was healthy by the end of spring. And then the one newcomer that we haven't seen is Marcus Kier, whatever we want to go with there. he's the one who's coming in fall camp that we will get eyes on for the first time. But I agree with Tracy. I think this is another potentially pretty deep and talented group. And I think, again, the big thing is this. I don't think this is going to be a fundamentally broken offense the way last year's was. So I think you'll see better production from this group. You know, even if they were similarly talented to last year's receiving core, but I think this is actually a more talented group than that.
Yeah. Let's finish with the people who catch balls.
Tight ends, Tracy. Yeah. Tight ends.
And I'm throwing Josh Pfeiffer in that, what I just said, in that category.
That's right. You know, he was insistent in my interview with him that he's more than just a blocker.
Yes.
He's got a pair of mitts. Yes. But then that's he also, at the end, he was kind of like, because he was like, oh, I want to show people that I'm much more than just a blocking tight end. But by the end, he was like, yeah, and in fall, going into fall camp, big thing I'm focused on is just working on the jugs machine, making sure my hands are nice and soft. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, man, it's a good idea.
Did he say he was more than 258 pounds?
He didn't say anything about his weight.
Okay.
But he's a big dude. I think even if all he did was block, he would be an insanely valuable piece of this offense. Everything I've seen and then read about JMU, like from some people who watched the team extensively and analyze it at a pretty deep level, which shockingly, there's actually a good amount of coverage of JMU. His blocking is always described as like the unheralded but most important piece of this rushing attack for JMU. I'm expecting that to translate to UCLA, and I would expect him to be a pretty definitive starter at this point, because they're going to want to run the ball. That's going to be a huge focus, and not just with the running backs, but with the quarterbacks. Anything he can provide extra in the passing game is huge and changes, you know, kind of the way teams will be able to defend UCLA when he's in. But even if he doesn't catch a ball all year, I think he's going to be hugely important.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to go on a limb. He's going to catch a touchdown pass.
Look at you.
Because last year at JMU, he caught four passes and one was a touchdown. And I watched the play. He was held up the line, held up his man, and then just released, just wandered out past the goal line and no one picked him up. They looked at him and, yeah, they're not throwing you the ball. Threw him a touchdown. He grabbed it in those big mitts like it was his first child and wouldn't let it up. It was amazing. They are going to go for five or six games, not even look at him once, and then leak him into the end zone and throw him a pass.
Hell yeah. But then beyond Pfeiffer, I think this is the depth chart, or this is the position group on offense We'll get into offensive line. One of the most fluid, I would say, at this point.
Good.
I don't know who else it's going to be besides Pfeiffer, because right now we've got Noah Fox Flores next and then Braden Lofton after him. We both watched both these guys in spring. Braden Lofton might have been seeing more time by the end of spring. I still think Noah Fox Flores makes the most sense as the, you know, pass catching version of a tight end. But then we haven't also seen Harry Lodge at all, because he wasn't in this spring. He just came in at the end of May. That's another interview that'll be coming soon. So it's, I don't know. And, you know, beyond those guys, there's Stevie Amar, Dylan Sims, and Peter Barrio. Sims maybe still a little bit light, especially given his height. You know, Stevie Amar actually got a fair amount of time this spring. So I don't fully know what to make of this depth chart right now.
My takeaway by the end of spring was watching, I isolated a little bit on the tight ends, just a little, not enough really to come to any conclusions. Braden Lofton just looked far more fluid and knowledgeable in playing the position. Just kind of knew how to find that space, how to run that seam route, just a lot smoother in executing his route and catching a ball. I think Fox Flores is probably more talented. But we'll see. I'd be surprised if Harry Lodge does much. He's a redshirt senior that hasn't done much wherever he's been. He's a big dude. So we'll see. But I think that it's like, I think you said, the fight is between Fox Flores and Lofton. And I'm going to have to go with Lofton just from what, and it's really based on almost nothing, just a feel for where I watched him running routes and how smooth, confident, knowing he was in that route running.
All right, so I think we make this our battleground. You're out of your mind. It's going to be Fox Flores.
We have to create some controversy.
Yeah.
Dave, you have no idea what you're talking about.
You're losing
your mind. Braden Lofton.
No, it's Fox Flores. He's got two names.
That's our biggest argument we're going to come up with. Basically, the second, who's going to win? Second tight end. Yeah. Okay. So that's anyway, it. That's all about the offense.
So assessing. Well, the position group as a whole. I think it's going to be pretty decent. I would say I would be surprised if they have anything like a Devin Asiasi or Caleb Wilson type. I don't. It's hard for me to imagine any of these guys catching more than 20 balls next year.
Yeah, I'm less confident. I don't think it's that solid of a group.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any real star power there. No. You have to kind of thank the football gods that Josh Pfeiffer is there, because you can't underestimate what it's like to execute that blocking tight end in line role. And he plugs in and is able to do it. If they didn't have that, I would say, whoa, like alarm bells would be going off for this position group. I just don't think it's that strong. I don't think we're going to look during the season and say, wow, man,
yeah,
that they really made an impact. Look at them, caught those balls and had five catches in that game, advanced it up the field. Like kind of we're used to with the UCLA tight end position. I don't think we're going to see that.
I will say one other note from the Pfeiffer interview. He said that UCLA beat out Ohio State for his services, which is, I think, an interesting and another feather in UCLA's cap in doing that, because that's not the only guy they beat Ohio State for in that transfer portal cycle. All right. As Tracy said, we're done with the offense now. There's nothing else to talk about, right?
Only the biggest key to the entire season.
Oh, right. The offensive line. So let's do this first. Which position on the offensive line are you most confident that they have a starter set?
Center, Riley Revell.
I agree. Next. I think for me, it's actually, God, it makes the most sense for it to be Eugene Brooks. However, I'm more confident in Carter Sweezy.
Hmm. See, I don't, the next most certain... Really, for me?
Are you going Jordan Davis?
What's that?
Are you going Jordan Davis?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jordan Davis just because...
Who else would it be?
Who else would it be?
I guess that's true. I guess by default, it's kind of Jordan Davis.
I might even go for third most certain would be Hall Schmidt.
I disagree. That one I disagree because I think we saw enough of JD Dean that I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up starting.
I guess I'm coming from this standpoint. After Riley Robel, I think among the interior linemen, I think Eugene Brooks probably has a little edge, but between I would not be surprised any starters among Brooks, Julian Armella, Carter Swayze, any two of those three would not be surprised, but I would not, coming away from spring, I didn't say really any of those two had that locked up any way. I just think Hall Schmidt, I mean, the guy's going to be in his fifth year. Even JD Dean had some potential. I watched him a lot. He shows signs of being a P4 tackle, but I didn't see him as ready. He still just looked youngish to me. Hall Schmidt, some limitations athletically, but the dude is big. He knows how to play. So that's where I am on
big
it.
Big dude.
But there is, I think there's going to be a lot of competition at those guard spots. You're more a Carter Swayze guy. So going into spring, Carter Swayze knows the offensive line, knows what's going on, knows the coaching. Eugene Brooks was probably absolutely clueless. Between spring, offseason workouts, summer, working with the coaches, then August camp, I think Eugene Brooks is more talented than Carter Swayze, and he will edge ahead is how I look at this. But like I said, it could go any way.
Yeah.
But actually, beyond those, this is the worry. Beyond those three, who's playable? I guess the next would be Derek Osmond.
Yeah, I think that's probably, well, or Sam Yoon.
Or Sam Yoon.
So Sam Yoon obviously has played a ton of center. I don't love him as a guard. I mean, I don't love him as a center, but I don't love him as a guard just because I think he got pancaked a lot by defensive linemen last year, got thrown back on his butt. And I don't know if he has enough functional strength just generally to handle a guard spot. I think you can get away with some things at center that you can't necessarily get away with at one of the guards positions. So I don't know about that one. I think he might just be a center and probably the number two guy this year. So it's probably Osmond. Osmond has a lot. He's another interview that'll be coming. He has a lot of experience. He's played a lot of different positions. The big thing is he's coming up a level. He's coming up not just a level. He's coming up two levels, basically. If you consider G6 to P4 a level, well, he's coming all the way from FCS. He's coming from Harvard. And, you know, he's 6'3", 315. But this is his first time in a P4 weight program. So it'll be interesting to see how that maybe improves him strength-wise, his functional ability to block P4 defensive linemen. But yeah, I think he's probably the fourth guy in that guard rotation right now.
Maybe Sean Nah. We saw him a bit, mostly at center, but he does have some P4 experience. He was hyped, kind of. They thought he was going to be someone at Arizona State. I think he got set back by a few injuries.
Yeah, and there were questions about his just kind of like, you know, where he was in his like mental standpoint from, you know, being committed to, you know, doing the playbook stuff, all that kind of junk. And I don't know if that's just ASU talk or if that was a real thing, like whether he wanted to continue playing football. So that's one where, yeah, if he can show off some of the promise that he had early on in his ASU career, then yeah, he could factor into that rotation too.
And maybe JD Dean is playable inside. Maybe
could happen. And this is maybe my overarching thesis about the offensive line. And I think it's one where Tracy, you might disagree a little bit. There's a numbers game going on here where they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. They're going to have 23 offensive linemen in fall camp. If they can't come up with a rotation of 7 or 8 guys, that would require a bust rate that is borderline unbelievable. There's enough bodies here that, yeah, I don't know the exact complexion of it, but I would be really surprised if they're not considerably better than last year. And I realize that's a very low bar because last year was one of the worst offensive lines I can remember seeing at UCLA. But Riley Rebel is he's going to be an upgrade over Sam Yoon because he's not, and this isn't me trying to be snarky about Sam Yoon, his snaps are going to be better. Like, he's not going to be snapping it and having it take, you know, a full second and a half before it gets to the quarterback. Like, that's not going to happen. Eugene Brooks is a year older. That doesn't always mean a year better, but most of the time it does. Julian Armella may be a backup this year. He began last year as a starter. Carter Sweezy has a lot of experience in this offense. Not maybe prototypical P4 guard size, but has played considerable snaps at JMU, which has had more success for the last 2 years than UCLA has had in its, you know, basically in its last 70 years. You know, Jordan Davis and a guy coming up a level, but I don't think it's too big of a thing to say probably an improvement over Cortland Ford last year, who really couldn't execute the position at any level last season as a Bruin. And then at right tackle, instead of Ruben Unije, who coming off of, I can't even count the number of surgeries that poor guy has had, just was not really physically capable of playing the position. You're going to have a few options, all of which are, you know, I think healthier and probably more promising. So I guess my point is there's a lot of position battles here, but with the sheer number of guys they've brought in, and many of whom have had real college snaps at this point, I just, you know, I kind of think they're going to come up with a combination that's going to be significantly better than last year.
I agree with the basic conclusion. I disagree on the premise that bringing in so many guys, there must be a good amount of playable guys. I think in your first year when you're building a program, I think what they did, and I really admire this strategy, you bring in guys that you think you can play, and then you're going to bring in a whole crap load of guys that you think might be able to play, and you'll end up with a hierarchy. The guys who can play, the guys who might be able to play sometime down the line, you've recognized them as potential P4 players, and then the guys that you've determined over the course of a year just can't play and you got to shed them. There are plenty of guys that fall in right now to group 2 or 3. Like, we literally don't know at this point throughout someone. Michael McDonald, the JC transfer.
The singer.
God, so many Michael McDonalds. It's amazing. I mean, so many guys. Is Jensen Somerville, will he ever be able to really play? He's going into his third year into the program. Hasn't really broken through into the rotation. Can he? Offensive line is just a different whole animal, man. I mean, you can bring in a guy that you think, God, I don't know if he'll ever, you know, Connor McDermott. he came in at 6'7", 6'8", and 218 pounds. And you'd have to look at him and go, God, I don't know. I think it was maybe within 2 years, he looked like an NFL prospect. So there are plenty of guys with offensive line, it's just different. You know, Zahir Young, who knows? Some of these guys look pretty good on tape in terms of athleticism. So it'll be interesting to see which guys they recognize are guys who can play. Guys who, you know, they think have a chance to have a play either maybe this year or in future years, and other guys they literally just shed. But I've always advocated, and maybe in this new era, in the NIL era and the scholarship being kind of a gray area, you can do this more readily, and maybe past programs would have done this if they had these kind of rules. But back in the day when UCLA used to carry like 12 or 13 offensive linemen, I just was fundamentally against that. You know, they say carry 14 or 15. I would have liked to have carried 18 or 19 and just try them out, see if they can play, because it's such a crapshoot with offensive linemen. And I think that's what this staff is doing. So I'm really happy with what they're doing, but I wouldn't be surprised if 6 or 7 of these guys aren't with the program next year.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of this attrition's away. But I do think they will be pretty solid this year.
I really don't know. I think a lot of it, we haven't talked too much. A lot of it is about Jordan Davis. If you plug in solid play at left tackle, everything else feels okay. It all kind of feels like you can see it working. Because then you've got Riley Rebell at center, who you have some confidence in, Eugene Brooks, UCLA's best offensive lineman last year, Carter Swayze or Julian Armella at the other guard spot, and then a really experienced guy at right tackle. You take Jordan Davis out of the equation and he's not able to play solidly at left tackle, it all kind of falls apart.
I'm starting from the baseline of last year, UCLA had, I'm trying to be judicious here, but I do think this is correct, the worst tackle play I've ever seen from them. I don't want to sound too, and that even goes to 2 years ago when they were starting their fifth string guy at left tackle by the end of the year. Last year was worse in many ways for me. Cortland Ford was really, 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 really bad. Ruben Onyeka was not, like, only by like the slightest bit better at right tackle. So I look at it from that standpoint where I'm just like, yeah, could Jordan Davis be below average? Sure. That's absolutely possible. Would that still be a massive upgrade over Cortland Ford from last year? Yeah, it would.
See, you're using last year as a measurement. And like you said, it's so bad. Being better than last year isn't necessarily saying anything.
But Riley Rebell, I think, will be considerably better than what UCLA had at center last year. Eugene Brooks is a year older, I think, will be better than Eugene Brooks from a year ago. So, like, the other spots on the offensive line are upgrading, too. So, simply going horrible to below average at left tackle would actually be significant, because everything else is, you know, a lot of these interior spots should be improving, too.
Hoping. Yeah.
Well, I don't think
I'm hoping.
Hope. I mean, Riley Rebell probably isn't going to be snapping the ball and timing with a sundial, you know?
True. We did see some snap issues in spring. You're right. I'm with you, but it's still the biggest question. If like Eugene Brooks would have stepped up in spring and you could tell the coaches had a mass amount of confidence in him at left tackle, left guard, that would have gone a long way for me. It was like, you know, they were playing musical chairs at right tackle for a lot of spring. And a lot of it is they were trying guys out, but at other positions across the depth chart, guys seized the position and they were with the ones for most of spring. You didn't see that. And maybe that's just Coach Smith's way, like I said, but it's worrisome to me. I have not seen enough to feel confident that this offensive line is going to be good. There's some pieces there that could make it good, but it's the biggest question mark going into fall for me. And probably the most critical aspect of whether this team's good.
Well, let's pump the brakes there. Aside from backup tight end.
That's our number one argument,
though. Obviously.
Hey, you know what we didn't talk about, though?
What did we not talk about, Tracy?
Our top 30. We finished.
We have
big completed. Surprise.
Big surprise at number one was the quarterback, Nico Iamaleava. You know, we joke about that. I went back and looked. In like 3 of the last 8 years, it has not been the quarterback who has been the number one guy. One year it was Andre James.
Who's that?
Yeah. 2 other years.
Really?
Leatu Latu and Jay Toia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Andre James year, if I remember correctly, the that was Chip Kelly's first year where we had no idea who was going to start at quarterback.
Right.
So I think we actually had Devon Modster as our top quarterback.
Wow. Those names. Those names.
And it ended up being Wilton Spate and Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
But very interesting the way I thought, the way this came up, because there's a lot of uncertainty with this roster. So we had a lot of variations on our among our voters. But Zaire West was number two, Jordan Davis three, like we've been talking about right now, how important he is to this team. He was number three. Zaire West, that comes from like PTSD for all of us of we've seen what UCLA's defense can be with a little bit of a pass rush, and then we've seen what it is without a little bit of pressure on the edge. That's why he's so important. And then, first off, I just want to say I'm really happy with the way this ended up. Sammy Omosigo is fourth. Highly, highly important. I mean, there were no big surprises here for me. If you guys haven't had time to look at it, take a look. It's something very unique to Bruin Report Online that we've done for
so many years.
Yeah, so many years. I'd like to look at our first one and see if we even know all 30 of those names.
Yeah,
of course, Brandon probably does.
It's probably like 2014, if I had to guess, when we did this first time.
Wow. Yeah, but you can tell what we've been saying in this podcast is even with our other voters who we couldn't influence, it is very much represented in this. They're on the same page with us over so many of these players. So, yeah.
22 of the top 30 players had at least one top 10 vote.
There you go. One other thing to mention. I know Dave just doesn't want to talk about football recruiting anymore, but I did write a story because I happened to look again at damn how well they did recruiting under Bob Chesney in his first cycle. Read that story. We're not going to break that down, but it's not over, Dave. It's still not over. UCLA is still waiting for the decision of Brady Edmonds, a four-star quarterback out of Huntington Beach. And if you are into rankings, and I know most of you are, he could significantly move up UCLA, which is ranked number 17 in the country right now, which is stunningly phenomenal that they did that. Beat out Penn State. How do you beat out Penn State anytime? Especially with Penn State's staff, Danton Lynn, Anakaika Malloy. Edmonds could bump up UCLA and maybe even challenge USC.
He's sticking with Ohio State. Come on.
Okay.
If he was going to do it, he would have done it, right?
You mean recommit to Ohio State? Yeah.
No, right. I mean, if he was going to flip,
I understand that. I think if he were going to flip, he would have done it. If he were going to stick with Ohio State, he would have done it. He's just so doubtful right now. As long as he's got doubt.
He's got doubt.
Yeah. And this is fun because he's not a make or break prospect for UCLA, a quarterback prospect. I mean,
I'll go a little deeper. Like, honestly, this one is just kind of cool for the rankings.
Yeah.
Like, I don't – my eval of Brady Edmonds is that I'm actually not totally sure he's a you know, top-flight starter ever in the Big Ten.
I think he kind of is, but whether he's a fit in the offense –
A better point, yes. Yeah. So this is just – it's kind of just cool for, you know, flirting with a top 12 class or whatever. That's fun. So just pay attention to it from that standpoint. Yeah. But yeah, this is not a make or break because, again, like we were saying about the quarterback depth chart, they're going to have at least a chance at keeping. Well, they could. There's a world where they could keep all three guys next year, but they're going to have a pretty good chance of keeping either Madden or Ty Diefenbach. So they'll have their starter for next year, even if Nico decides to leave. So,
and we've heard,
it's not a done deal that he's leaving.
A done deal that he's leaving.
How about we sneak in that nugget with with at the 59 minute mark, we sneak that one in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we've said it before, so
yeah,
it's not big news.
All right. Okay, well, then. Tracy, this has been a delight.
I'm so delighted down to my pants.
Full of delight. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back next week after Media Days. Talk about that. Talk about everything.
Going to Chicago.
Going to Chicago.
Maybe a dog. Where are you staying?
I'm staying at the, I don't know, the Media Hotel. I think it's a Hilton.
Okay. Just like right next to the convention center?
I don't know. I think so.
Yeah.
You're a hotel guy. I'm not.
I'm a hotel guy.
Yeah, I just hotels stay where it's convenient.
Okay.
All right. For Trace Pearson, I'm David Woods, Brewing Report Online. We will talk to you again next time.
See y'all.